Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we are here with Justin Brown from Interface Death. This is the second time he's been on the show. Welcome, Justin.
Hello, thanks for having me back again. It was great last time. I'm sure it'll be great this time.
Oh, absolutely. We always have a good time when we're chatting.
That's right.
We'll jump in pretty quickly to updating people about the last investigation we were on together and talk about some of the things that you guys are advancing into now. But let's just start from the beginning and give a brief concept on who you are and how you got into the paranormal and what you guys do today.
Well, as you said, my name is Justin Brown. I live in Hillsboro, Ohio, which is a little hick town in southern Ohio. I have been researching the paranormal since 2013, as far as the field research goes. I've been starting my own business for the last couple of years. I've been a photographer, an independent filmmaker, and a graphic designer. I also do science consultation for multiple paranormal groups, and I do a lot of work with Deadlight, with Josh Bender, with a graphic and concept design for his business. So I have become very busy, especially in the last year or two. I travel all around Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, West Virginia in search for the paranormal to try to apply science to it in order to understand the phenomena by, you know, correlating scientific principles with the phenomena, trying to collect data and logging it so we could try to find some environmental factors that might, you know, help predict or even measure the phenomena. We try to explain the physics behind electronic voice phenomena, all types of voice phenomena. As far as that's concerned, we try to, you know, do some psychical research, and we also do a lot of research in urban legends, a little bit of cryptozoology, and sometimes UFOs. So it kind of branches off there, but we mostly focus on the spiritual realm.
Well, it's that's something I think a lot of people, and I've had this discussion many, many times within the past several weeks, actually, have forgotten to do a lot of times. I know that most groups that are coming out today, they're building off of the perception that they see on TV and what they can put together and so forth, because there's no real physical scientific training that's out there currently that revolves around the paranormal. But a lot of people haven't properly put scientific theory to the methods involved, because there are a lot of things you can rule out. There's a lot of things you can rule in. There's a lot of things you can apply to try to find those loopholes and those gaps to see if it's plausible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And what I've been doing for the last 5 years is trying to fight against all the misinformation that you get from the paranormal pulp culture as far as TV is concerned. And you have to learn science. You have to learn the devices that are used by science in order to apply science, you know, to the paranormal field. Like, you got to learn about all the gadgets. You got to learn about how the scientific method works. And you just have to, you know, use critical thinking. And, you know, all the stuff you thought about before when you watched the TV shows or when you read the stories, you have to demystify a lot, and you have to learn what's not paranormal in the beginning. And, you know, so in order for you to try to get to a point where you can consider some paranormal explanations for phenomena either reported or observed.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, actually. A lot of the process when you first start in the paranormal is deducing what is not paranormal. And there's a lot of it out there, from writings and science and historical account that's actually theology and myth, all the way to current science, current methods, and even current equipment that's misunderstood. And in order to develop that, I like to when I first, and you know this because I picked your brain many, many times. I picked many, many people's brains throughout the process because I'm always learning, being an observer as opposed to an actual physical investigator in the field a lot of times, which is why I left investigation behind. I like to think of it as just like any education, it's an ever-learning process. And the only way I can actually observe and learn properly is to take those people that are better educated in specific areas than me and learn from that. And that means a lot of times I have to pick away the non-reality from the reality and just continuously ask questions of, to other people, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's key because if you're going to draw a parallel to the science field and the science community, they rely on so many different people who are pursuing the same thing, essentially. There's a lot of different subsets of science and different areas where they focus on, but they have to research what everybody else is doing. They have to communicate. They have to, you know, get together in a respectful and objective manner and just learn from each other. And based on our history of science, the people who are, you know, looking for answers now is looking back on what has already been found and then the work that's already been established by scientists before them. Okay, so what you're doing is just the natural process. You're trying to find people that you think have a good idea of what they're doing and learning from them and just building your own research off of that.
Yeah, you build off the learning education just like we all did when we went to high school. We all did when we went to college. We all did when we developed our careers. How did we learn how to do this? Well, we applied those people that came before us with that education and understanding. We applied those methods and we grew that off of learning from other people's methods that were educated or well educated and knew what they were doing to apply our own theories to figure out how to do it ourselves. It's another thing I think a lot of people have forgotten, which is commonly used in science, like you said. I mean, there are so many different branches of so many different divisions of so many different processes, but all of them have to come together at one point or another and in a lot of ways learn off the other person in order to develop that new theory, that new development, that new thought, or find out that something doesn't work. Otherwise, you just have no idea.
Yep, I agree.
Excuse me, I had a bit of a cough there, so I had to kind of hack on you a slight bit. I apologize for that. So when you're doing this out in the field, the paranormal listeners, so that you know, there's a lot of methods that are out there right now that – I guess I should take a few steps back. Originally, 20 to 30 years ago, more science applied to the paranormal. But then once media came in and things changed a little bit, and of course some of these – paranormal looks weren't they didn't work with certain scientific communities, so that got ruled out of the educational ladder. And in other situations, it touched base on so many other scientific methods, you couldn't put it into one course. So the educational board decided this just isn't plausible. There's too many false theories out there, and there's too many other real theories that apply to the specific scientific methods that are there. We can't put basics into one course. So it just basically got ruled out. When that happened, it left a big gap. Now that gap went on for, I would say, roughly about 5 to 10 years, maybe longer than that. It could have been right around 10 to 15 years. I'd have to look at the actual time frame. And during that period in time, media picked up and they tried to put their own little spin on it. The issue with putting your own little spin a lot of times on this is you don't learn all of the real methods, because we as normal people, if we have a standard education in a career that doesn't apply to quantum physics or the half a dozen other things that are out there, we just simply don't have that understanding. So we have to learn it on our own. This is why I took a few steps back and learned from universities and went out to the investigators like Justin and so forth, so that I could learn both aspects and see how it applies to those few that want to take it to the next level. That's one thing that I appreciate and respect about you, Justin. You and your team actually do that. You think things through. You look into it a little bit more in-depthly, and you try to understand that science and that study based off of what you can read, what you can understand, what you can apply. And then you say, well, let's do this in the paranormal and find out how it works. Is it going to work? Am I going to get something? Or am I just going to get another crackpot theory? Well, I'm not going to know if I don't try it.
Right. Einstein was famously quoted by saying, if we knew what we were doing, they wouldn't call it research, would they?
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know you've done a lot of different things throughout the years, from understanding EVP to applying the different levels of audio science to try to see if you've gotten some things there, to more in-depth things, or at least what you can talk about. I know you guys are working on some things that obviously you can't share right now because, well, if you did, it would be non-confidential, and then, well, that kind of screws whether it works or not, if that makes sense. But let's talk about a little bit about what you do out there in the field and things you have applied so far.
Well, I would like to begin by saying that there is a very large wedge in the paranormal community that exists, in my opinion, when you talk about science and using it to research the paranormal. Okay, the actual definition of paranormal is some type of phenomena that exists outside the understanding of science. Okay, that's the general definition. So a lot of people kind of take that literal and take it to heart. They're like, okay, well, why even try to use science? And these last 5 years, I've, you know, been, you know, pretty much upset that this definition of paranormal phenomena has, you know, been stapled like that. So I want to take the para out of the paranormal. I believe that these things are normal but rare. I believe that physics does apply to what's happening and what people report, observe, and experience, but we just need to gain more knowledge to understand how to do it. And once we start approaching it like that universally, I think then we can move forward, okay? And what we do specifically is we try to use cross-checking. We try to use the scientific method to actually experiment with hypotheses and see if we can get supporting evidence of whatever hypothesis we're working on at the time, just like science would. Okay, so you should be able to apply that with anything, like especially EVP. EVP is probably the most predominant thing paranormal researchers try to do because it's probably the most common phenomena. Maybe the most common phenomena is probably disembodied voice phenomena, but EVP is easier to validate. Okay, if you have something just come out of the thin air, like a voice or a noise, footsteps, you really can't validate that as paranormal. But EVP, you could start with your own definition or belief of what EVP is. I believe the general definition of EVP is something that you cannot hear with your ears in real time, but on playback of a recording device, it is heard. And there's a host of ideas and hypotheses out there to explain why that happens. And really no one knows. But since there is a good question there, you can use that as a hypothesis and set up experiments. And what I've been doing since I've met Paul Browning, he took David Roundtree's work and turned it into a more affordable, smaller handheld device that people like me and you could go out there and start doing EVP research. So if you have time, this is going to get really sciencey, okay, but I'm going to lay it out for you since we're talking about it. Okay, there's two main theories on why I think EVP can occur when you don't hear it. First off, I want to say that the whole theory behind, well, it's above or below the spectrum of hearing. Well, if it was, you still couldn't hear it on the recording device. And furthermore, the recording device, the frequency response on the microphones aren't designed to pick up things below 20 hertz and above 20,000 hertz. So that's ruled out. What you begin to realize is, okay, is the microphone being manipulated? Okay, that's one. And there's two main things we test. Dynamic microphones use a physical process called electromagnetic induction. And all that means is a coil of copper moves over top a magnet. It essentially moves over top a within a magnetic field. So when your voice hits the diaphragm of the microphone, it causes the coil to move over top the microphone, which induces the electrons in the coil that sends the signal to wherever you're sending to, which is the recorder in this example. So in theory, if you have a magnetic field present, which is paranormal, it can manipulate the coil, which will induce the electrons in such a way, in the same way that a voice would, to simulate speech. And what we do is we set up a recorder, we have a control with two condenser mics on a four-channel PCM recorder, and then we introduce two separate mics on left and right channel that are very susceptible to EMF and very sensitive, and we try to get the voice phenomenon to occur on those mics and not occur on the control or in the independent variables and the condenser mic. So that's one way we try to do it. Another way is capacitance. Now, if you just take any regular digital recorder, it's a condenser mic. So that's a little bit different than your dynamics. When we test that method, we have to take into account that the static charge variance of the two electric plates and the condenser mics can be manipulated through other particles that carry a charge. So all electrical energy has magnetic fields, so they can trap up charged particles that can change the charge variance and the transducer that way and cause a signal as well. So, you can go to the website that I'll plug later on and see how we do both of those. Now, I will mention that a lot of people believe that it's a psychic imprint on the recorder itself, which is probably the easiest way to test. And all we do that is we run a separate recorder and we stick a mic into the recorder, like a cheap little $50, $60 recorder, and we just cut the mic off and we just hit record. So it just records essentially no signal whatsoever. So in theory, it can just imprint the flash memory, or you can use analog tape decks and just set the tape down and see if it imprints the analog tape and have it work that way. So those are examples of what we try to do with electronic voice phenomena.
Well, if you think about it, and listeners, I know some of this is going over some of your heads a little bit, and some of this with the more experienced listeners, you're listening going, well, that's fascinating. If you think about it, by taking all of those methods and applying them, you're applying virtually every theory that's out there right now, which means that plausibly you should be able to get one that sticks a little and a bunch that don't. That's applying real science. You mentioned something earlier that is quite true. What is the true definition of the paranormal? Well, basically, if you define it all down, it means the unknown. What is the unknown? What science can't define currently? And I like to tell people that's the way a lot of science began as well. Well, if you think about it, even though we have applied scientific method, how did we apply those scientific methods and find out they work? Well, we advanced them through unknown knowledge. We do this all the time in science. And sometimes we come up with the answers by mistakes. That's how the atom bomb was created. We were looking to create the atom bomb. We figured out it was going to fail, and somebody went, whoops, and there went a big explosion. It wasn't done intentionally. A lot of our best creations through scientific advancement was not done intentionally. It was done because we were researching something we thought could be plausible but was unknown in that factor. And a lot of times, throughout searching that unknown factor, we stumbled upon the answer, if that makes sense at all. But that applies a lot throughout the scientific world. And the best way to do that is to take those theories and apply them to what we already understand to see if we can catch those loopholes to open up more questions on what's really going on.
Right. And a good example I will mention to go along with what you're saying is Isaac Newton wanted to figure out gravity, but there was no method to do so. So he invented calculus to, you know, measure the predicted nature of the celestial, the movements of the celestial bodies he was observing, like the moon, the stars, the earth, the sun. So he made up calculus. And what's fascinating about that story is he made it up. He created it as fast as it would take someone just to learn it. So, and it's fascinating because when you think outside the box and you just go with, you know, what you need to do, it takes leaps forward. Very, very smart people, they need to make a leap to where others can fall behind and start doing other great things like Einstein and Bohr and Max Planck and all the other great physicists out there. I mean, you gotta have a, you know, profound leap forward in science and understanding the universe to unravel the mysteries.
Yeah, it takes an incredible leap of faith to unravel the unknown in any way, shape, or form. And in a lot of ways, that's also our hindrance within the paranormal world. Like you mentioned before, because the term science is what's unknown, which is beyond the spectrum of reality of existing science right now, even though science still applies the unknown every day when they're looking into new theory, because that stands there, people have utilized that to not go beyond those boundaries rather than go beyond those boundaries. And I think that if we actually put some real thought into it, which is why I think you and I work on the same page a lot of times, and I'm fascinated with a lot of your work that you do. If you actually put some real thought into that, every groundbreaking incident that has ever been done took a leap of faith. And a lot of times when those groundbreaking incidents were there, people got laughed at. They got told it wasn't going to work. They got told it was impossible. Yet we have electricity today and we can fly in airplanes. We have computers. When people were told that the internet was impossible, that traveled billions of miles away to talk to other people. All of these things wouldn't be plausible if somebody didn't take a leap of faith somewhere along the line and go beyond the reasonable boundaries to realize there were other possibilities involved.
Right. I've had skeptics tell me a lot, you know, that I've witnessed, like things levitating on their own, flying across the room. They'll look at me like I'm a liar and they'll say, that's physically impossible. I'm like, no, it's not. And like you said, you start thinking about how it's possible using science. Well, there's two things that can cause levitation. Okay. You can have, ultrasonic levitation. Okay. And if you research that, you're pretty much introducing high frequency waves that cause these compression waves, you know, that stack up like pancakes. If you have emitters on the top and bottom, or, you know, one on top and one on bottom, you'll see these compression waves if you have the right light, and they put these little things in between the compression waves and they can levitate things. So that's one way something could levitate something just by using vibration. There's also electrostatic levitation out there too. And all this, you know, is normal science. You can go out there and research it. So it's not physically impossible for these things to move on their own. You know, the power of the mind has been researched to do some pretty interesting things. And when you dabble into the occult, you know, the government has looked into this. Now, is the government going to publish all their findings publicly for everybody to know? Of course they're not. But there are a few people out there that have exhibited these skills.
Well, these days, it's more likely that they will publish it, but good luck reading it because 99% of it is blacked out in the process of publishing it. Hey, look, we'll admit we went and looked, but you can't read it.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of actual when you go beyond the paranormal and you get into the supernatural, a lot of times you find out that a lot. I mean, there are people that do amazing things that go beyond standard scientific reasoning, but for some reason they do that. There's a gentleman that conducts electricity through the body in high sorts and amounts that shouldn't plausibly have done it in the past. There's a gentleman that breathes underwater for prolonged periods in time that theoretically shouldn't be able to do that. Levitation and using the physical mind to do other things is very plausible. It's just you have to take the existing scientific methods and look beyond those to the other logical theory, like you're saying, basically. Rule out certain methods, rule in other certain methods, and then apply the unknowns to those methods to see if they're physically plausible. The United States government has been doing this for years, by the way. The paranormal is not new, listeners. When it comes to that, they failed in many incidents, and they've succeeded in others. That some of it you can find, some of it you'll never be able to find, and when you do find it with the new release variables that they're saying are going to come out, you're just going to find a lot of blacked out stuff. But it is definitely something that's applicable to how people should look at the paranormal rather than just run around and in the dark and say, oh, gee, hey, look, I got some flashy lights and I got a ghost. One of the things that I think plays a lot into things as well, and several of our acquaintances have done this, Matt being one of them, to see whether it applies, is the acute paranoia in your senses when you're actually out there. A lot of things apply to the paranormal that can be scientifically explained, and a lot of things don't. One of the things we often explain off, or at least I can explain off, is the fact that when you are alone in an environment, and that environment is dark, you already know a history on it, it can play with you a little bit, psychologically speaking, if that makes sense at all. Well, of course it makes sense to you. You know what you're talking. You know what I'm talking about. But those are things that I think a lot of people don't look into at all either. You hear the bumps in the night. You see the shadows in your peripheral vision, which also can have many, many explanations. And you start witnessing things because of your reaction that become self-instinct, self-preservation, and so forth. That and it's fascinating when it happens to you. I spend an hour and a half doing it in an isolation session just to see.
Yeah, you got to try different things, change it up, see if, you know, that's a variable when it comes to stuff happening. You're trying to, you know, get stuff to happen. So you got to try different things, and isolating yourself in areas, one of them, you have to think of all sorts of ways. But my main problem with the psychology and the paranormal is cognitive dissonance when people are introduced with, you know, a fact or a finding that opposes their own, and they hold such a personal belief of their own, although it opposes the information presented to them, they'll get stressed out and they won't want to accept that information. Uh-huh. And, you know, people experience pareidolia a lot, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, I've coined the term false positive machines out there in the paranormal field that's popular. So, you know, they'll rely on pareidolia to, you know, validate to themselves of what they're hearing is actually, you know, some type of paranormal phenomena. And like you said, the mind plays so much of a trick. You do yourself an injustice if you don't go out there, understand, you know, psychology and how the mind works. I mean, it's not hard. It's just really not hard. You go out there and you look at the clouds and, oh, that's a dinosaur. Not really, but it looks like one. Okay, well, you go out there. Oh, look at that moth. It looks like it has eyes on its wings, but it's not. But it may fool a predator into thinking it's either bigger or, you know, something else. Camouflage is even a form of pareidolia. You know, the mind won't see the animal or whatever's camouflaged as easily. And it's just built into our evolution. It's built into our mind. And it's just how things work. and the same thing goes for what you hear, you know. You know, if you have kids, they may think you hear, you know, they may think you said something totally different from what you said all the time. And they'll just add in what they think they heard. and it's nothing what you said. So, you know, just do research, just be honest with yourself. And please read about the idiomotor effect too. That's going to help a lot.
Deductive reasoning is something that I tell a lot of people to use too. Just because you have some of these devices that are creating false positives, use some deductive reasoning with that a little bit. There are many, many devices out there that's going to pop out a word or a name or so forth. And ironically, when you ask, is there somebody here or can I speak to somebody, what is your name, that name is going to show up. But does that really mean that it's communicating with you? Use some deductive reasoning there when you're out there. Don't just assume that because it said the name was Sarah that you're now speaking with Sarah, because that device, odds are, is going to repeat that several times. Get to the bottom of it. You know, if a private investigator or a detective just assumed when they looked at a situation that, yep, that's the case, then I think 99% of people would be convicted a year in crimes and then never caught the real criminal, if that makes sense. I'm saying that a lot tonight. It makes total sense. Yeah, it happens all the time. So if you use deductive reasoning a lot of times when you're out there and you do it properly, you'll realize through your deductive process, okay, this is not paranormal. I've already registered it. Let's move on to the next situation. Let's try something different. I see a lot of flaw a lot of times when I'm out at especially conventions and group events, because it is fascinating. It is a thrill for a lot of people to go out there and go on a ghost hunt or a ghost tour. And when you're young, that thrill makes you really feel, hey, look, I got a ghost. But reality is, the longer you spend in the field, the more you realize, yeah, I didn't really get a ghost here. So if you start applying that early on and you listen to those that have been out there for a while, you start to realize you can move past that and move into the real science and move into the real things that are actually quite fascinating once you do, because you start to really read into it and understand that there's this broad spectrum of things that granted, when you first come in and the average community may not know about it, becomes an interesting thing to just sit down and read a lot of times. You get to apply it somewhere along the line when you're really lucky, but just reading it and talking about it becomes fascinating in itself. There's just so many things that combine together that you can utilize that get forgotten. And that's kind of sad if you think about it.
Well, I try not to complicate things. I try not to overwhelm myself with all of this information and knowledge when I'm out there. All we should be doing right now is trying to find anomalies. We don't know. It's impossible if we know something's a ghost or a spirit or whatever. There's no way to know that at all. And let's face it, you have to, if you're honest, you'll know that and you'll preach that. But you can find anomalies. You can validate anomalies. Uh-huh. You don't know the source, but you can say, I know for a fact that's an anomaly by the methods that we discussed a little earlier with the EVP research. I also am doing this really, really interesting experiment that's going to take probably years to develop, but we're going to use a cloud chamber to try to see if we can catch a manifestation inside of one. I don't know if your listeners, if they're not sciencey nerds, have ever heard of a cloud chamber, but maybe they've heard of it, you know, briefly in school, where, you know, people do particle physics research using cloud chambers. We're actually going to build a custom one that's big enough to deploy in the paranormal field to see if we can get a manifestation. And now that those things right there, you know, that's not your weekend warrior, I'm going to ghost hunt this creepy old abandoned building type stuff. That's something that is like, I'm pretty much the only person in the field that's doing the research, and I'm like on my own. So I put up these methods in which people can follow me, can support me, and help me fund those things if they would like. If they're really serious about it, they can do that. And I'm really excited. If you want to talk about, you know, that type of stuff, we can, but it can get really in depth.
You know me, though. I love the in depth when it comes to the science and practicality. You did mention something that is very true, though, what you mentioned, a couple of things, and that is you can't overthink things when you're out there, too. It's better to stick to one particular avenue when you're applying things and then advance that later once you've figured out that theory doesn't work and move on to the next and move on to the next. And the other thing that you brought up that's very, very – it's a plausible and realistic point is right now, contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, there is no way to prove a ghost exists. There's just no way to do it. And that should be something that we all apply when we're in this field, because you can't prove something exists until you can actually physically figure out what it is in the first place. And right now, we're not at the point to where we can do that.
No, we are not, unfortunately. But, you know, just being able to standardize some process throughout the paranormal community to validate anomalies, you know, voice phenomena anomalies, visual anomalies, things that you can set up an experiment, other people can replicate and repeat. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can be done, okay? But, you know, what I want to stress here, and you share the same sentiment, is don't worry about proving if there's a life after death. Don't worry about proving if there's some type of sentience to this phenomena that we're researching and investigating. Just try to focus on validating anomalous phenomena. And as long as we do that, I think it may become more real, more achievable, and take the sexiness out of it, I guess. You know what I'm saying? There's this pop culture sexiness to this whole, oh, I'm going to, you know, go ghost hunting this weekend and talk to dead people. And
it does seem like it's a culture that's fascinated a lot of people, and they jump in for the thrill involved rather than the understanding. And that's a task when you're truly in it to develop the science and find the real answers. It can be a real struggle. I've seen a lot of very good investigators walk away from the field from time to time because of the stress and the task involved. So it's a loop, definitely. But like you said, if you can actually go past that and study the anomalies, collect the data involved in that, and you can find out enough occurring data that matches, well, then you've got something that's provable. And then you just build from there. But you have to be willing to do that. It's a struggle that I think every scientific community has done somewhere along the line, to be honest with you. And we didn't quite agree to electricity right off the bat, even though we knew it was there. We didn't quite agree to air flight, even though we knew it was plausible. There's always the people that are going to push it while you're fighting the battle. And that's the toughest part.
Yeah, that's when you have a breakthrough. There's been so many painful breakthroughs in our culture. Just thinking back when the first person who discovered that the world was round, I mean, they were burning people to the stakes. They were killing those dudes, you know, saying that the earth revolved around the sun instead of vice versa. They were killing those dudes, you know. A lot of religious leaders reigned over our culture, and it went against the dogma. And now you see such a resistance against religion because of our history. And I think religion has tried to say, okay, wait a minute, we need to be smart in science. And, you know, the Catholic Church has done that. You know, they have scientists in their ranks, you know, but still there's a lot of denominations out there and religious communities out there that don't. You know, they read the Bible, they take everything it says literally, and that's a problem, you know. So people just need to listen to reason. They need to be educated. Somewhere along the line, there has to be a standardization of how you conduct paranormal research, and there needs to be an authority somewhere, somehow. But until then, we're not going to progress. We're not going to make those leap forwards that we need to. you know, until someone makes some type of crazy breakthrough. I hope that I help. If I don't do it myself, I help the person who does do my research, and that's the best I can hope for. But I'm not in this, you know, just for a hobby. You know, sometimes, you know, if things get tough at home or if the budget gets stressed because of it, I just back off as much as I need to. But I look at it as a lifelong endeavor because I know that this is something so insanely difficult to understand and to work on. But I know the importance of it and how profound the answers will be once we get there, that I feel that the priority to do the research and the, you know, just the importance of it is very, very, it's very important that we do it. That's all I can tell you, folks.
Well, you said something, and listeners, when I state this, I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression, because this is very, very important to my heart. A lot of people work on that word standardization, and from a scientific view right now, from our view, yours and mine, there is no standardization there. Although there was at the beginning, it's fell apart. But there is a standardization that has appeared in the past 10 to 15 years, and unfortunately it's the wrong standardization. It's called business development, and I think a lot of people get that confused. The paranormal right now has a lot of people that go out into it, and they're doing it for the thrill, they're doing it for the excitement and so forth. And I say this with all kindness and politeness, but don't mistake yourself when you're doing that, and understanding that there's not a standardization there. It is there, it's just wrong. The reason you're going out there for the thrills is because there's a standardization in business that knows they can make money off of that. The reason that you have false positive devices is because there's a business world out there that understands that they can make money off of that. And I respect that, but it's the wrong standardization for real scientific research.
Well, Chris, I don't respect that. I don't advocate that type of thing. You know, I stand up on a soapbox all the time. I have a show with that name and tell people that they're wasting their time and money. Now, the standardization you're talking about is, like, for example, photography. Okay, we use cameras to investigate the paranormal, learn photography. There's standardized practices and educational programs to do so. So do that. Okay, there's science. There's many subsets and many facets of science you can learn, ranging from psychology to physics. Learn all of them. Learn every single subject that falls under the umbrella of science. Learn them all. Okay, that's standardized. Okay, then you start doing, you know, the education on audio engineering. Okay, that's standardized. So I believe that's what you're talking about, right? It started off like that. You know, you take your certain, you know,
certain individual fields that are subjects that are standardized for your learning process that you can apply to the paranormal world. And a lot of the people that originally started, the people that I originally started to speak to before the, I like to call it the paranormal fall, because we had a falling and then the media kind of up brought it into something different. Before the paranormal fall were a lot of different educational fields, and a lot of times those fields worked together to answer questions. And you learned off of the individual standardized fields and the educations involved so that you could learn that. It's a lot of people just lost that in the mix.
Yeah, and what is important, I think, too, is why you're actually researching the paranormal. I find a lot of people, especially electrical engineers like Gary Galka, you know, had a tragic loss himself. Frank Sumption, who started the whole, you know, radio sweep, ghost box movement. I mean, these people have their own individual motivations, but when you are compromised by some type of tragedy in your life, that is a really bad thing to have as far as baggage when you're going into things. You want to remain as objective as possible. So if you think, you know, just after you're experiencing a loss or a tragic, you know, incident in your life, you really have to identify how compromised you are at that point and how it will affect any type of research or any type of answer seeking. I see a lot of people that are emotionally compromised by tragic loss and tragic, you know, events in their life. They're not very objective when they go about things. You know, like Gary Galka, for example, he suffered the death of his daughter, but he's also an electrical engineer and understands science too. And I have observed Gary Galka over the years being compromised by his loss and not being as objective as he should be. And he posts things that are just outright not paranormal when he believes that they are. And I just wanted to throw that out there too, that, you know, you want to consider those factors when you're doing it as well.
Oh, absolutely. You have to, a lot of times when you're looking at things, you have to take a neutral stance. And unfortunately, when you are emotionally attached, sometimes you can't take that neutral stance. So you have to kind of take three steps back when you're in any type of study or scientific method to make sure that that you keep those parameters involved. I fully agree with that. I've seen a lot of good people that are excellent in their degrees, but unfortunately, like you're saying, that personal aspect just got too involved, and now they're way off base on where they could have been.
Yeah.
And you know, I only respect the business world because I've been a part of the business world for a number of years. But I can honestly say that there, in any business world, you can reduce this to everything past the paranormal. There are standardized things in other business practices, so that listeners understand, that aren't exactly the right practices. Now, I can respect the fact that somebody built that and they're making money off of it because they're running a business. And yeah, they may make billions of dollars a year. They worked hard at that, but that still doesn't mean it's right.
Capitalism and ethics there's a fine line there, right?
Yeah, there is. There's a fine line there. And I perfectly agree with Justin and take the stance that sometimes you just simply have to say, hey, guys, you do know this doesn't work, right? So it's definitely, well, listeners, I'm going to take a brief pause here. You're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations in the United States of America. So if you're planning on doing a radio podcast or otherwise, and you're looking to go with the best, make sure you look up Donald with BBS. He's a wonderful gentleman. They'll take great care of you. A few side notes. Generation Truth has actually maneuvered past their very first four investigators, Justin being one of them. We had the privilege of videoing him and his team, which we'll be putting in an episode here at Waverly, which was a very exciting experience. We are now moving past the investigators for a short period in time to actually spend a little bit more time in the scientific world, talking to universities and several other people, as well as getting some real-life aspects from the culture itself and the individual people on why they view the paranormal the way they view the paranormal today. So keep in mind that Generation 2 documentaries will be coming out in 2020 through 2024. And we're branching off into a lot of other individual situations as well. On a slight bit of other paranormal news, very, very quickly, there is a new comic company coming out. It's going to be a vision of Paracomics called Reality Paracomics. I want you to pay attention to this in Comic-Con next year. It's going to cover the paranormal as well as a lot of different educational and scientific methods, which I think a lot of people will actually be interested in because of the way it's applied. You know, again, you're listening to Justin Brown on BBS Radio. Justin Brown is the leader of Interface Death, and we're talking a little bit of science. So let's just kind of jump straight back into it here, Justin. In the last, I do believe I've got about 9 to 10 minutes here, give or take, and talk about where people can find you, how they can actually follow you, and let's talk a little bit about how they can help fund you once they're interested as well.
All right, I appreciate that. Well, the hub of all my presence on the internet is interfacedeath.net. You will be able to find all of our scientific research, how we do it, what gear we use, all of our video production is from, you know, we do produce video production of, you know, documenting the history, the experience at these locations we investigate, and the operations and the process of investigating itself and the results if we have any. We leave it open for people to donate to us either through Patreon, PayPal. If you would like, you know, to help us out in that way, just go to the website. It's very, very easy to find and look at. You can get rewards. But we have a presence on all major social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, we're there. And we put ourselves out there because, you know, yeah, we are investigators, but we also like to educate. We like to build, grow, and strengthen the paranormal community through podcasts, through blogging, through live streaming. You name it. We provide all of the necessary and mandatory content that you need to stay relevant in this ever-changing, fast-paced, growing world that we call the internet in the 21st century. So to keep up all with all of that, we need your help. It is extremely difficult to fund this on our budgets. We're not rich, but we're doing things that essentially cost lots of money. You know, real scientific research takes funding, okay? And one of these things that we do want to progress in the science field is building a cloud chamber that we can deploy in the field that will do research on how things like ghosts as we know it manifest in the environment, okay? If you're interested in learning more about that, I have an old video, but I plan to update it this year sometime. But I can explain it in detail to you. If you have any questions, just email me at justinbrown@interfacedeath.net, and I'll be glad to explain that to you. But we stay active all year round. We take a little break in the winter, but you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can, you know, if you're in our Interface Death group and club and community, you can follow us on our live streams. You're constantly knowing what we're doing. We do things similar to what Chris Houston is doing with me now. We speak to others in the community, and we just try to do everything we can to help the paranormal field grow and be better.
And that's a wonderful thing that I think a lot of people should actually apply to the paranormal world. The more the community works together, the more the community educates each other and works in a facilitating nature to collect the data involved, to look at the anomalies involved, and to apply the real factors, the more we can advance the community in the field. You definitely have 100% support from me, Justin. Once I can free up funds, you'll see a lot more support from me. But I am much appreciated for what you and your team do. I think it's a wonderful thing. You're a very fascinating person. Obviously, we love to have you on. I'd like to have you on once a year when we can get it, if not a little bit sooner. You've been listening, ladies and gentlemen, to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Justin Brown has been our host with Interface Death. We found out where to find him. Next week, I have a very exciting show planned with a unique guest. And then we're going to end this month with one thing I like to do every 3 to 6 months or so, called Let's Think About This. And that's a time where you get to see Mr. Houston here talk a little bit about the scientific community, what we've missed by interviews, some of the more recent updates within the local Ohio area and surrounding areas, talk about some of the books and research and so forth applied by many, many people. So I encourage you to tune in through the rest of the month. We have several locations that we're going to be looking at as well, and some other exciting things to announce. Justin, in closing, do you have anything you want to tell the audience?
Yes. I want you guys to keep asking questions. I want you guys to not be discouraged by, you know, the skeptical community. If you have interest in the paranormal, if you have, you know, any interest at all in the unknown, please contribute to the paranormal community somehow. Find, you know, the people, the organizations, and the facilities that you believe in, you know, try to digest all these shows in, go into social media, go on the internet, just keep searching, keep learning, keep sponging all this in, and just, you know, stay focused on what you're passionate about, because there are people out there that experience things, maybe you have, but if you're still looking for experiences and may never find it, that does not mean that all is lost, but if you are willing to just, you know, contribute a little bit into the paranormal community, there are outlets out there, and I hope you consider you know, interface death as one of those avenues that you and Nick can explore and help, you know, promote in the future. And I appreciate you having me back on the show. It's always fascinating and interesting and fun to talk to you. The hour always goes by too fast. We like to talk, and the subjects we talk about are always very, very complicated and in-depth, but there's always...
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on, definitely, Justin. You've heard it here at Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm going to end this with the quote that I end every single week, as you notice from talking from a real investigator that actually does real research. And the paranormal truth should always be that reality. So whatever avenue you go to, make sure you ask those questions. As Justin said, make sure that you look into it a little bit more deeper and go beyond the normal to find out the truth that's really out there. We're going to end it with saying have a good weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy it.